For the record, today is Tuesday, June 23rd, and we are getting started at 11:59 a.m. My name is Tanika Williams. I am interviewing our oral historian, Mr. Reuben Harpole Jr., and he is a retired social activist and educator. And this is for the project titled Oral Histories on Plant Closings in Milwaukee. Alrighty, so I feel like I got a little preview.
Okay.
And I did do a little research, but why don't you go ahead and just start by telling me a little bit more about yourself, like where you were born, you know, your family, and where you grew up in particular here.
Okay, I was born in Milwaukee at the county hospital,
mm-hmm.
September the 4th, 1934.
Mm-hmm.
And I first lived on 4th and Galena
mm-hmm.
in a little apartment
mm-hmm.
and with my mother and father.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved with my grandfather at 807 West Summer Street, where I mostly grew up. So my grandfather had a business. He had a coal plate business where he would deliver tons of coal into various homes in the neighborhood. And later he had bicycles. He had the Johnson rental bicycles where the kids in the neighborhood, he had about 30 some bikes mm-hmm. in the yard, and the kids could rent those bicycles for 25 cents an hour or 50 cents for 3 hours.
Oh, okay.
And then during the Memorial Day parades downtown, my grandfather would have the bicycles all decorated in different colors around the wheels,
mm-hmm.
and the young people in the neighborhood, about 30 of them, would have sailor hats on.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a 1937 Buick limousine car that my mother used to drive around when she was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And but in the parade, he would drive the car in the parade, and I would sit in the back seat. And it had front seats,
mm-hmm.
and then around the front seats, he had extra chair seats for other people. It was a 7-passenger car instead of a 4-passenger, 7-passenger. And then had a window that would roll up between the back and the front.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had a microphone in the back, and I used to get the mic and talk with him in the front seat.
Okay.
And then stick my head out the window as he was rolling down Wisconsin Avenue and 30 bicycles behind there.
Okay.
So it was a lot of fun.
All right.
And then my grandfather put a merry-go-round in our front yard
mm-hmm.
so that myself and my two sisters could have fun in the house, and we wouldn't have to go anywhere,
okay.
but we'd just have fun around our own house.
Right.
And then later, he had a chicken coop,
mm-hmm.
and we used to sell chickens to the neighbors.
Okay.
And sometimes I would have to go out and kill the chicken, and then so they could, my grandmother could boil the chicken and take the hair off.
Mm-hmm.
And that used to upset me because I'd have to take chicken's head and wring it off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I would see the chicken
that.
Flopping on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
That was horrible for me.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It sounds like your grandfather had a strong impact on you, and
he did.
Lot of businesses as well.
Yeah, he was a business. He had a third grade education, but he had a brilliant mind for mathematics.
Okay.
And in fact, how he learned mathematics, he said
mm-hmm.
he had a friend that went to school in the South, but he didn't go to school, but his friend would come home and teach him everything that he had learned
mm-hmm.
in school, and he learned in the fields, cotton fields.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how about yourself? Where was your education based?
Well, while I was at 807 West Summer Street, I went to 9th Street School, which was just north of where we live.
Mm-hmm.
It was on 9th and Walnut.
Mm-hmm.
And Summer Street was just south of Walnut.
Okay.
So I went to 9th Street School and then to Roosevelt Elementary, Roosevelt Junior High School.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I went to North Division High School.
Okay.
So I'm a Blue Devil.
I'm a Blue Devil too,
yeah.
but
yeah.
through Duke, not from,
yeah.
not through Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So after you graduated high school, what did you move on to doing
well,
next?
Well, after I graduated from high school, I was working for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Worked at American Can Company.
Okay.
And then worked at the Milwaukee Post Office for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to, before graduating from high school, while I was in high school, around the 9th or 10th grade, I worked for Starks, S-T-A-R-K,
mm-hmm.
apostrophe S, General Cleaners.
Okay.
And I was 14 years old when I started doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was working late at night, cleaning up offices and so forth,
mm-hmm.
when I would get to school, sometimes I'd fall asleep. So I ended up failing a number. It had six-week courses, six-week, mm-hmm. and then I'd fail a couple of times. And then toward the end of the semester, when I see that I was going to fail, I would hurry up and study and pass.
Oh my goodness.
That happened to me with chemistry, and I ended up loving chemistry,
mm-hmm.
and I'd get high grades in chemistry.
Okay.
After I learned how to I memorized the different
table of elements.
Elements.
Mm-hmm.
And then I memorized the how many atoms and so forth they have, so I could really use the valence, the concept of valence,
mm-hmm.
and put together elements.
Okay.
Like salt.
So what made you decide to work while you were in high school?
Well, we were a poor family.
Okay.
And I had to work to keep money in my pocket.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure you're self-sufficient.
That was a great job. In fact, I would have probably been the owner of the job, but my mother thought that the guy was cheating me, but he wasn't. He was putting up money so that I would have
college fund?
And it was an endowment.
Oh, okay.
And she thought he was taking money from me. He wasn't. He was saving it for me.
Okay.
And she fussed at him, and then that's how I lost my job.
He said,
"No, I don't want to be involved with all that."
Okay. And
I learned quite a bit from him.
Okay. And how about your own family? How many?
That came later after I was going to school at the MATC,
mm-hmm.
and I was studying chemistry. Mm-hmm. And while I was in a chemistry class, I had two friends that were there,
mm-hmm.
Arthur G. and Gordon Harris.
Okay.
And so one day, those guys came to me and said, "Hey, I have a young lady I'd like for you to meet. She's attending Marquette University."
Mm-hmm.
So I said, "No, I already have a girlfriend, man. I don't want to be here."
Mm-hmm.
So they kept bugging me. When we have laboratories and so forth, they kept bugging me, "Hey, man, we still want you to meet today."
Mm-hmm.
And so eventually I gave in. I said, "Okay, I'll just meet her. That's it."
Mm-hmm.
And so I had another friend. I don't know if you've ever heard of Shirley Caesar.
No.
She's a gospel singer.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the greatest in the country right now.
Okay.
And she had a brother named Julius Caesar.
Okay.
And so he and I were talking. I said, "Hey, man, I want you to meet somebody," because I didn't want to meet her.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very articulate himself. So I went over to O'Donnell Hall where she was living,
mm-hmm.
and asked him the front desk for Mildred Collin. That was her maiden name.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, "Who should we say is calling?" So I said, "Julius Caesar." So when I did that, her whole dormitory exploded. And then she came down and met him. But she didn't like it.
Oh. Well, that worked out to your benefit then, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, then later, after I finished school and was working, 1956,
mm-hmm.
I got called to the Army.
Oh, okay.
But we were not close to each other then, because she had gone off to another school,
okay.
Howard University. And
she left Wisconsin.
Huh? Okay. Yeah, and then when I got called, I was sent to San Antonio, Texas,
mm-hmm.
for basic training,
mm-hmm.
in healthcare. And one day, while I was in the barracks,
mm-hmm.
they had loudspeakers around, guys sleeping, speaking to the hall. They said, "Harpo!" And so I said, "What?" The guys always try to be tough, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, "Telephone." So I said, who knows I'm down here? Because I didn't tell I was going to the Army. You know? Mm-hmm. And so when I got on the phone, I said, hello. Mm-hmm. And then she said, she didn't answer. She just said one question. She said, what are you going to do?
Okay. What'd you tell her?
So I was so shook that I'd recognized her voice. Mm-hmm. I was so shook up that she had found me. Mm-hmm. I said, how'd you get my number?
And the rest is history then?
And so then
she said,
never mind. So then I proposed to her over the phone.
Wow.
February 14, 1957.
Wow.
And I couldn't marry her until I got back out of the Army because they sent me over to Korea. Okay. I didn't know I was going over there, but she did. Because they wouldn't tell you know, where you're going. Either going to Germany or you're going to Korea or you're going to mm-hmm. England or whatever. Mm-hmm. And but she had found out, and I didn't know, because she was studying law, and she knew how to go and find out stuff. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so finally, I served my term in Korea,
mm-hmm.
and in 1957 got out, and then we got married in 1959.
Oh.
So I kept my word.
Okay.
Yeah.
And still keeping your word today.
We got married, and after about 3 years, we had our first child.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a second child and mm-hmm. a third child. The first child lived 26 days and passed.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And then the second one is still alive, and the third one is still alive.
Okay.
And the third one was a boy, mm-hmm. and he ended up getting married and having a couple of children. My daughter's still single.
Okay. And so when you came back and were raising your children, mm-hmm. how did things in Milwaukee change around that time?
Well, what happened was my wife, after we got married, we moved back to Milwaukee
mm-hmm.
and got an apartment at 2958 North 2nd Street.
Okay.
And we were across the street from Frank P. Zeidler, who was the mayor of the city at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so things started changing then. That was 1959, 1960.
Mm-hmm.
Then they started building an expressway
mm-hmm.
around 1960. And that expressway removed 8,500 families from the central city.
Mm-hmm.
And see, prior to that time, we had a Mayor Meyer. Well, no, later, after Frank P. Zeidler was the mayor, then Mayor Meyer turned over the mayor. Mm-hmm. And Mayor Meyer, Frank started clearing out so-called poverty areas,
mm-hmm.
and was urban renewal or urban removal, because he moved a lot of families away, mm-hmm. and that killed 3rd Street, because we had it was a shopping center on 3rd Street,
mm-hmm.
and that killed that,
mm-hmm.
and then it killed some of the places downtown,
mm-hmm.
and then I had to work, so I had a job at American Can Company,
mm-hmm.
and I was working there, and I was able to go back to the post office because I was drafted into the Army for instance, so they had a relationship that said returned soldiers could get their job back.
Mm-hmm.
So I got my job back. So for our first few years of marriage, I worked two jobs.
Okay.
And that was 16 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I hung on to that, and then corporations started closing
mm-hmm.
during that period of time. One of the places that my grandfather worked, he was a crane operator at Wisconsin Grion Foundry.
Mm-hmm.
And that went out. And then International Harvester, which employed thousands of people,
mm-hmm.
they closed. Then Rexnord closed.
Mm-hmm.
And then
A. You said Smith, the record stores?
Rexnord.
Okay.
Nord.
Okay.
N-O-R-D.
Okay.
And then it was called Caterpillar later.
Mm-hmm.
And then Alice Chalmers was the hugest. Alice Chalmers at one time had 22,000 people working for them.
Right.
They were the largest manufacturing, the largest employers in the state of Wisconsin.
So what would you say, how did you notice that there were so many closings going on? Was it because of your grandfather, as you said, or
Well, no, during that period of time, I was going to MATC, and I didn't pay any attention to that.
Okay.
And where I really paid attention to it when I started, I was at the Urban League, and the Urban League placed me in charge of Area 7, which was around 2nd and Burleigh, which is around where I lived. I lived at 2958 North 2nd Street. Frankly, I lived at 2821 North 2nd Street, right across the street from me. And we had a fantastic neighborhood, and I was the one that was supposed to pull everything together. And we were attending a Catholic church that was there, St. Elizabeth, which is now Martin de Porres. And because the expressway had moved a lot of African Americans out of the so-called ghetto into this area and into other areas going to north and northwest, then the people did not want to accept the African Americans who were going there. And some of them would turn around in their seats and say, "Why don't you go to your own church?" You know, so this was embarrassing. So as the coordinator of the neighborhood, we held a series of meetings called Hello Neighbor. And we had an attorney in Milwaukee named Attorney Dorsey, James Dorsey, who was brilliant. And James Dorsey had tried to run for alderman for many times, and we was always defeated by a white guy. So James Dorsey knew what we were trying to do, and he would always give me about $10 or $15 so I could buy those gifts, and so the people would not get be hungry and so forth. And we did that for a number of years. And then finally I asked Frank P. Zeidler. I said, "Frank, is there someone at the university that could really help us with all these problems that were going on?" He said, "Yeah, there's a guy by the name of Bud Bloomberg." He said, "Go over and talk with him, and maybe he could give you some help."
Okay.
So I went over to Bud Bloomberg's, and he said, "I'm sorry, man." Bud Bloomberg was a genius, real actually. And he says, "I'm sorry." He says, "I'm planning to get out of here. I'm going to California." And so he said, "There's another young professor in Milwaukee, and his name is Belden Paulson." He says, "Why don't you go over and talk with him?" So there was a white guy that was with me. And so we went over to Mr. Paulson's house, who was at Newman and what street is that? Downer and Newman, right on the corner, Downer and Newman. And we were sitting there talking. And so Belden said to me, he said, "Look, I have to go to Brazil for a project. And so when I come back from Brazil, then you and I can sit down and we can see what we can do in the in your area."
This was prior to the closings, the plant closings, right? This
no,
was, during this was during that time.
Yeah, the plant closings had taken place.
Okay.
And so chaos was going on.
You know? Okay.
Yeah, and in fact, Inland Steel had started a program called Inroads, and that's still going. And there was a guy running it, Tovar. But the guy that started the Inroads program had approached myself to be the director, and I didn't want it because I was already working with a group at Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin called Summer Prep.
Okay.
And that was a fabulous program. We took 105 boys out there and helped them to become developed, well-developed, because we were working with Jesuit priests as teachers and also Milwaukee Public Schools teachers. To teach the young men how to be men and how to study and how to soar. And out of that project came many different great things. We got two doctors out of medical doctors. One's running a medical clinic in Meridian, Mississippi now. That's Ronnie Purvis. And then Durbin Gray is practicing medicine somewhere. And one young man that was 12 years old, we took him out there, is now a full professor at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. His name is David Artis. Got his PhD at Stanford. Spent a year at Oxford, England. Then came back and had Yale and University of Michigan fighting over him. Both of them were.
So it sounds like you got pulled in a lot of different directions and got and were influential in a lot of people. How did you kind of manage that during this time?
Well, after I, when I was area manager of this area, I met, well, I told you, I went over and met Dr. Paulson, and then we started working through the area. And then that St. Elizabeth's church had a school called St. Elizabeth Elementary School.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, parents in that area said, we'd like to run our own school.
Okay.
And so the Catholic diocese was going to close the school. So instead of closing the school, they gave the parents $250,000 and said, you all can run the whole school yourself. And then my wife ended up becoming principal of the school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I was still working in the neighborhood. And the school was named Harambe because they knew that this Dr. Kenya, Jomo Kenya, from Kenya, I forgot his name, had used that word to organize the tribes to overthrow
let's
the British.
It means let's pull together. It means let's pull together.
That's what it means, yeah. But I'm saying that this king of Kenya used that to pull tribes together to overthrow the British.
Mm-hmm.
And so the students at Harambe wanted that to be their school because they wanted to pull together, and they did.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents did. And I then continued to work in the neighborhood, and we called the whole neighborhood Harambe.
Okay.
The school was named Harambe, then we called the neighborhood Harambe, and it was 700 and some odd blocks in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
But A.O. Smith had provided middle class wages and income.
For years.
Mm-hmm. So when A.O. Smith began to close down,
mm-hmm.
it brought about the vistas of poverty,
mm-hmm.
because people up until that time were buying houses,
mm-hmm.
taking care of their property, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So when they closed, that was a huge
blow.
Impact on the school.
And Alice Chalmers the same way.
And the community.
Mm-hmm.
People, those who had paid off their houses were in better shape than those who were trying to pay off their houses.
Mm-hmm.
And so they went into default, or they weren't able to keep the middle class standards.
Mm-hmm.
So the neighborhoods went down.
And what was the political and community response while the neighborhoods were going down? What was the political and community response when the neighborhoods were going down?
What would you say? They didn't pay any attention to it? And there was no political leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Because James Dorsey was never allowed to get in there. So the first person that was able to get in there was Val Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know about her, right?
I'm new to Milwaukee, so you can educate me as much as you'd like.
That's her.
Okay.
She was the first black,
okay.
She was the first black alderman, period.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Black or male, female or male,
mm-hmm.
in the city history. Right. And it's because of her that people began to get organized.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a white priest by the name of Father James Groppi.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, his picture is back there.
I read about him.
Uh-huh. Who organized a church called...
St. Boniface,
which was right behind North Division High School, which was my high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day, because things were so bad, Robbie led, it was called, he had a youth group, NAACP youth group that he was advisor to, and they decided to walk out of the high school.
Mm-hmm.
And it was right across the street was a Episcopal church.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happened, then Father Groppi became known throughout the entire city because the newspapers had a story because here was a white priest, mm-hmm. leading black youth into protesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so then... one of the reasons was that this lady was trying to get open housing going so mm-hmm. that black folks could buy houses and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And the city kept resisting. The
mm-hmm.
mayor and all the aldermen kept resisting. And so July 30th, 1967, riots broke out.
Right.
From 2nd and Wisconsin Avenue up until King Drive or Third Street at the time. And when that happened, the mayor called martial law and closed the city down. No one could leave or come into the city during a certain period of time because they claimed that this it was too dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So after that happened, and the reason why it happened, when that happened, then Groppi and the commandos started marching.
Mm-hmm.
And thousands of people began to march into Wauwatosa, over to the south, across the 16th Street viaduct.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the neighborhoods on the south side were all white.
Mm-hmm.
And the neighborhoods in Wauwatosa were all white. So when African Americans and whites who believed in open housing started marching,
mm-hmm.
so it was the force, they were trying to force the mayor and the common council to set an open housing law.
Mm-hmm.
And the whites would throw bricks and spit on the folks and call them names as they were crossing the bridge or as they were going into Wauwatosa.
Mm-hmm.
And so after a period of violence, the bill passed. The mayor had said that he didn't want to pass open housing just in Milwaukee, but he wanted all 19 districts, suburban districts around him, to pass the open housing also, so that he wouldn't lose people in the Milwaukee area, and the people in the suburban area would continue to be white. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was his excuse. However, that did occur. And finally, they did pass the open housing law, but after 28 days of marching.
Wow. Okay.
Also, the plants, some of the plants moved as a result of this.
Okay.
But the ones that remained were not hiring the neighborhood black people.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had had a balance between the companies that stayed to hire the black people, then I think the communities could have been saved somewhat.
Okay.
But they didn't offer job opportunities for the community people.
Mm-hmm.
And so consequently, the people, had to do the best they could to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Some went on welfare, some didn't. Some turned to crime.
Yeah.
And it was just a gradual. So when crime rose,
mm-hmm.
and vacancies and foreclosed houses and all of that
mm-hmm.
came about, the plants began to close.
Even further.
And move out, yeah, mm-hmm. because their employees, mostly white, didn't want to come into the depressed neighborhood.
So how did the communities feel about the white response to them? You mentioned, especially at the churches, too, getting spit at.
The community was very tight. They didn't care what white thought about themselves.
Okay.
They cared about what they thought about themselves.
Okay.
And so the churches were very strong during that period of time. And especially the holiness churches,
mm-hmm.
the Church of God in Christ, Mount Calvary Holy Church, the Apostolic Church,
mm-hmm.
They were very strong. Then the Baptists mm-hmm. and the AME Church.
Mm-hmm.
AMP Church was the oldest black church in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And it was founded on 4th and Kilburn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still going. It's at 1616 West Atkinson Avenue now.
Okay.
It's Mount St. Mark's AME Church.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in response to your question,
mm-hmm.
Several of the ministers, joined in the protests.
Mm-hmm.
And they set up food pantries.
Okay.
They set up job assistance programs.
Mm-hmm.
Only to be frustrated, even till this day. Black contractors and black business people do not have an equal opportunity to city jobs or
mm-hmm.
city opportunities, economic opportunities. And they have whites even coming from out of state or other parts of the state to come in.
Instead of people that are already here?
Indigenous to this community.
Okay.
And
why is that, that to this day they're still not
what?
Able to gain traction?
We don't have
That's not true.
That's not true.
They have a possibility of gaining knowledge. They have a great possibility. And the reason why, if you would check,
I think we're both interested to know.
The state has a law that says 5% of all state purchases should go to African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a long while getting to the point where there's 5% of the state's purchasing power going to the African American community.
It hasn't gone there yet.
But it's still there, huh?
It hasn't gone there yet. The state contracts, they're not providing 5% to minorities.
Of state purchasing, not the contracts. Contracts are different. There was a law that passed by the federal government that the Department of Transportation should spend not less than 10% with minority contractors.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't met that.
Mm-hmm.
And the office for that is at 6150 West Fond du Lac Avenue. Still, they've been there but close to 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And African Americans passing the place think that you go and get your license from there. No, it's for contracts.
Okay.
But if the brothers would develop the power, there would be money there for them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the most salient point is companies like Caterpillar, A.O. Smith, Rexnord, Obby's Plant. What was the name of that?
Who?
Obby's Plant.
Oshkosh Trucking?
No. Obby's.
The Albatrosto.
Albatrosto. What was that other company? When they closed,
Fister and Vogel.
Employers of a majority of black community.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave and
many of them couldn't read or write.
And you didn't have to be a skilled laborer.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, some of them couldn't read and write. However, they were able to make enough money to
send the kids to school.
Send the kids to school, to afford a house, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So when these companies closed, it left them out hanging.
Mm-hmm.
And the government, didn't supply the necessary support for the people to get back on their feet.
Okay.
Well, I was working at the Milwaukee Star newspaper, which was one of the greatest newspapers in the country at the time.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we took first place in the nation of all the black newspapers in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, we got a telephone call in the office. We were on 3rd Street before Martin Luther King Drive. And it says, can you send somebody over here? So we got a wildcat strike going on at Albatrosto.
Mm-hmm.
Now, wildcat strike meant that the brothers had walked off the job, and the management did not know why. And the management was out there trying to pull the hides out of the hides used to soak in, they had something that would take the hair off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And if the management had never done that before, and they were trying to take the cow hides out of it, and it was burning their arms and stuff. So they called in panic. And so the office sent me over there to try to find out what was wrong. Why was the black folks, because they had a no strike clause, wildcat strike clause in their contract.
Mm-hmm.
And so the brothers were shooting at the superintendent running up the Canal Street. So they asked me to go in there and find out what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read that you were very influential.
Wasn't influential, they just were panicky and they had no other choice and they needed some help. So they called a black newspaper And the Black Truth people, it wasn't because I had any skills. They just sent me. They didn't have anyone else to send. They sent me over there, and I searched around for about two or three weeks, and finally, I found out what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
The company had done a job search, and they had changed the formula for paying the brothers, and the brothers thought that the superintendent had stolen their money from them. They were gonna kill him.
Uh-oh.
And so when we found that out, what had happened was, Falk and the other guy that was there had placed a sign up by the checkout, and the brothers couldn't read. So I found out that they had a reading problem there.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lady up on Green Bay Avenue that was a fantastic restaurant. So I had the company to change, because they were cooking foods, for white folks. And I had them to bring this lady in so she could cook greens and cornbread and mm-hmm. black-eyed peas. So that kind of settled things down for a little bit. And then I went out and found some people that could teach reading.
Mm-hmm.
And we cut off part of the cafeteria in the church, in the school, in the Albatross Company,
mm-hmm.
to teach the young men, the men there how to read.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, Ragsdale came in and said to the lady who was like the receptionist when you walk in the door, he said, I used to see my name up on a bus, and I didn't know what they were saying behind my name, so finally I was able to read it.
Mm-hmm.
And she started burst out and started crying.
Oh.
And then the young lady that was a student at Rufus King High School was her assistant. She ended up going back to school and becoming a journalist, and she started the first African-American public relations firm. She's now in Virginia, but her brother's still here in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And so after that, we found out that the brothers, that they were not treating the men properly. So some of their equipment wasn't there, they had missing gloves, and they still had to pull those hides out of the line, so they'd have a long stick with a hook on it, and they'd pull it off, and then they'd throw the hide across a machine and pull the hair off.
Mm-hmm.
I found this out, that they used the hair to make glue. And then they used the hoof of the cows for jello. So they were using everything on their car to mm-hmm. make money.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, the management decided to do things right. So they improved the area.
Okay. What kind of improvements did they make?
They fixed it so it would be easier to take the hair off of the cowhides.
And they had a reading program in the
And they had,
right.
They had the reading program, and they had a cafeteria up there.
Mm-hmm.
And the management still remembers that cafeteria. It's been years.
And they had a scholarship program for their children.
Okay. And I know you both played a significant role in education. How did education change over that time? Was there, I guess, maybe I should ask, what was done in addition to the reading program to encourage that growth?
Trying to understand it.
So you said that the reading program made a difference. What else was done to build upon that? Maybe that's a better way to put
the
question.
Well, the management changed.
The environment more.
Yeah, we changed the environment.
Mm-hmm. Amenable
mm-hmm.
for the employees. And this hadn't happened before.
Mm-hmm.
So, they came to work and they were in a better environment and
mm-hmm.
made them feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And then the scholarship for their children.
Mm-hmm.
All of this contributed to their quality of life.
Okay.
Right. And I'm still in touch with the Trostles.
Okay.
They live in Minneapolis now.
Mm-hmm.
And their company's still going. They had a company down in Lake Geneva, and had one in Michigan and one in Tennessee somewhere. Then they had their sales people selling the leather all over the world. Was located in New York.
So that company actually maintained its presence here. Is what
not here.
Oh, not here.
No. They still moved away.
There's a beer company making beer in their plant on Canal Street.
Okay.
But their company did not lose because they located someplace else.
Okay, and that ties back to what you were saying earlier when they fought for the right to have the open neighborhoods. They were one of the companies that moved to a different area so that they wouldn't have to deal with those changes.
No,
that wasn't that company. It was, I'm trying to think of the name of the company. I don't know.
It was International Harvester that took a lot of people out of here.
Right.
International Harvester. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And then Alice Chalmers retired a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Alice Chalmers was angry with the union because the union forced them to pay high wages to everyone. And so that wasn't... So everyone didn't have the same kinds of skills.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when one of the people that we knew was an attorney for them. They were sending him all over the world, the one that died.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they found out that they were only making 5 or 10% profit
mm-hmm.
when they could have invested in stocks and bonds and made 15% profit, and they decided to close the place down.
Because
they weren't making enough profit.
So what at this point, what else do you think could have been done to improve? What other things do you think they could have done to improve the opportunities for these communities?
Well, education has always been the key.
Mm-hmm.
And it has proven, and it's not just education where you go and get an A, but it's learning how to do something
mm-hmm.
so that you become... in demand
mm-hmm.
for your skills. Now the big thing now is high tech.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't know how to work with the computer, you're almost lost.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the big thing.
I think one of the most debilitating results has been that children were growing up now in homes where no one was employed.
Mm-hmm.
Their neighbors, they didn't have role models
mm-hmm.
that could encourage them to stay in school.
Mm-hmm.
You stay in school for what? You know,
mm-hmm.
there are people around them who were unemployed,
mm-hmm.
who were just hanging around.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the men vacated
mm-hmm.
the home, and they had single parents, and they didn't have the neighborhood watch that mm-hmm. they used to have.
Right.
You know, neighborhood used to be closely knit,
mm-hmm.
and it was like, oh good, they're cold. And they'd have like neighborhood watch,
mm-hmm.
and if I were doing something wrong, my neighbor would, you know, feel free to chastise me
mm-hmm.
or to tell my parents or whatever. But I think the taking the economic base away
mm-hmm.
destroyed the cohesiveness of the neighborhood
right.
and the family
mm-hmm.
because the children didn't have anyone to look up to.
Right.
You know, the fathers or mothers, whoever the head of their family, would turn to alcohol, drugs of other sorts.
Mm-hmm.
They lost hope.
Right.
And the housing declined.
Mm-hmm.
The neighborhood declined.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, you know, bad. So that's what we have now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, thank you. I was just thinking about it.
We actually still have plenty more time, so we have, another. Okay. Pause. Let's do that. All right, we're back to recording? Yes. Okay. Well, and actually we covered a lot of ground about the plant closings and how they impacted families in the community, but overall, was there anything that you guys really want people to know about that we didn't cover?
Yeah.
Okay.
There was a period of time in Milwaukee when African Americans wanted to start their own businesses.
Mm-hmm.
that's after the period of time which I grew up, where a lot of African Americans had their own businesses, mm-hmm. barber shops, cleaning business, bandbox cleaners, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
King cleaning. But this group, Cathro Brown, started plastic ingesting molding company.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a young man by the name of Herb Palmer, who was working for Ellis Chalmers mm-hmm. as an engineer, and for a couple of other companies, who decided that he wanted to start his own engineering building.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of 400 engineers to design the Columbian spaceship. And he was living in Milwaukee, and he started Central Manufacturing Company, mm-hmm. which was located at 3901 North 2nd Street. And then he started Manutech, which was at 2450 West Hampton Street. And they cut steel, and he made mostly all of the metal bridges along the expressway. He had that contract.
Mm-hmm.
And companies, he had to go outside of the city of Milwaukee to get contracts. I helped get him a contract with Oshkosh Trucking, because mm-hmm. they had billions of dollars of building armored cars for the Army and so forth in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, he was having some progress with Caterpillar, getting contracts from Caterpillar, Wisconsin. And so he got a contract with them, and the people who were giving him a contract said, we're going to give you about $3 million worth of work per year, so you're going to have to stock up on steel
mm-hmm.
in order to handle the job. And they helped him to get the steel. But then they got some new people that would give out contracts they had just graduated from college, and they got them into office, and then they cut it. They gave the contracts to their friends, and that threw him into bankruptcy,
mm-hmm.
and he had to leave the city. Mm. And the other young man that started his own company mm-hmm. was Townsend. Townsend had worked with a plastic injection molding company up northern part of Milwaukee, and he had his company on about 25th and Belit, and he couldn't get any contracts, so he left and went to Tennessee. And so those would have been two great manufacturing. Herb Palmer was hiring young men right out of prison, and he said, all I want you to do is listen and learn. And since I don't care what your background's been. And he hired one guy, stayed with him for a number of years,
mm-hmm.
and making good money.
Mm-hmm. So when these people left and the opportunities that they were going to create went away, how did that impact the community?
Say it again.
How did it impact the community when these people that had, you know...
A lot of people lost their jobs.
Mm-hmm. Did they leave as well?
No, some of them are still around. In fact, Irv's sons got another job. One of his sons, he had opened up three manufacturing companies, and one was being run by his son.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know what happened to that one, but the other son actually bought a house here and mm-hmm. finished UWM in school.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're around. They got married.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're around, and they're making it because they're skillful.
Okay.
One son had a degree in in manufacturing, so he would know how to set up a company, you know,
mm-hmm.
from MATC. So the city lost a great leader in business to Florida.
Okay.
So that's where he and his wife are at now.
Okay. And I know you guys mentioned that that a lot of people went on welfare and whatnot, but there was also an increase in crime that happened.
Hmm?
I said there was also the increase in crime that happened. So, what has been done to stop that or slow that?
Nothing.
Well, I don't know. The city allegedly has designated an area in which, and Habitat for Humanity joined forces, and they have constructed new houses, or mm-hmm. they have offered these houses, foreclosed houses,
mm-hmm.
for sale at a reasonable price and so forth, trying to build up the neighborhood. However, the crime is just out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And the schools are seeing the results of that.
Okay.
You have children who are coming to school without any motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Some. Too many. And they have security in the schools, which in some cases is to no avail.
Well, there are a number of people that are doing a great thing. One guy is Andre Ellis.
Oh, yeah.
He's working with about 100 young people. He's doing a great job.
Mm-hmm.
Running Rebels.
Huh?
Running Rebels.
The Running Rebels is doing fabulous work. The Urban Underground is doing fabulous work Brewster, super guy working with young people.
Boys and Girls Club.
Who?
Boys and Girls Club.
Oh, the Boys and Girls Club. They're all working. And so there's a number of people that are working, doing a great job. Earl Ingram has about 800 young men that he's working with.
Mm-hmm.
And the Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity had something called a Botillion, mm-hmm. helping the young people understand who they are.
Mm-hmm.
That's a super program. They stopped from, they didn't have a Botillion this year because they wanted to start younger. They wanted to start with 11th graders
mm-hmm.
instead of seniors.
You know? Mm-hmm.
And then, so that'll be started next year.
Mm-hmm.
The Kappas have scholarships. And there's a number of people that's working with young people with scholarships, and AKAs are working with a lot of young people. They have what's called, and then there's, I'm trying to think of the name of that group, Mildred.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that, AKLs, the young people that they work with.
The AKAs?
Top Ladies of Distinction.
Oh,
okay.
So it's a whole series of people that are working with our young people.
Okay.
Yeah, but there's a whole another group that's not being touched by anybody. You know.
We need more volunteers.
Okay.
We need
there's a need robots. There's a need for more people to get organized in their neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy told us we need more nosy people.
Okay.
Well, hopefully these interviews and people hearing them will help. So, unless there's anything else you guys want to add, I think we covered a lot.
What about Nia Amani?
What about it?
She started something and it's still going.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with the topic, which is plant closings.
Hmm?
Plant closings.
Oh, plant closings.
No.
See, you got.
No, she asked me. She asked me earlier about what are people doing to help young people in the crime area and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So Nia Amani's helping with the crime area.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Go ahead and stop.